Good afternoon and welcome to Saturday with Cormac O'Hara. Today, deal or no deal, we'll get the latest from the tunnel in Brussels. 13 years on, did Ireland's mental health strategy turn out to be all vision but no change? And do we really need a law to allow you to switch off from answering work emails and calls after hours? That, and we'll keep an eye on the match. But first the news, read by Kieran Evren. Thank you very much indeed, Ciara. 33-5 is the latest from Fukuoka and Ireland hammering Samoa, and long may that continue, may I say, objectively. Our panel today is Michael Darcy, Minister of State at the Department of Finance and Fine Gael TD for Wexford. Catherine Murphy is co-leader of the Social Democrats and TD for Kildare North and member of the Public Accounts Committee. Catherine Martin is deputy leader of the Green Party and TD for Dublin Rathdown, chair of the Eochtas Women's Caucus, and Enda Murphy is a psychotherapist. 51551 if you want to get in contact with the programme today. And the email is saturday@rte.ie. Let's talk about Brexit and the negotiations that are ongoing at the moment in Brussels, in the tunnel, as they say. All the talk during the week was about a pathway to a possible compromise. But I wonder, was there too much optimism, Michael Darcy, Minister of State, because we're on dodgier ground here than Fukuoka, aren't we?
Well, Fukuoka is actually holding up pretty well from what what I saw in the first half.
Maybe better than the talks.
Well, we don't know yet, but certainly circumstances have ebbed and flowed during the week. So there was a lot of negativity in the prospect of any deal being done. There was a bit of megaphone diplomacy coming from one side of the ocean.
What's this pathway, though, to a possible compromise? What does it mean? There's an awful lot of... Tony Connolly boiled it down to customs and consent. So leave consent out of it for a second. We'll talk to Dr. John Kyle from the Progressive Unionist Party in just a second to get unionist reaction. Yeah. What is the compromise on customs?
We've always said that so long as the regulatory structures on both sides of the border on the island of Ireland, so long as that was adhered to, so that you don't have customs checks. We don't care what the language is or what the methodology is.
So the IRC then now, is it?
That's to be concluded and decided. They're gone into the tunnel. The circumstances changed when the Taoiseach met with Prime Minister Johnson on Thursday in Liverpool. The day before, certainly, there didn't seem to be any prospect of a deal. But the pathway is there now, and the Taoiseach has moved this on significantly to the point that Michel Barnier and the European authorities were able to move into the next phase, which is get into the tunnel, see can there be a change of the view from the current British government. The withdrawal agreement won't be reopened.
Yeah, but
the circumstances
are still
the same.
Then they'll have to, Minister, sell it to unionism. And let me get reaction from unionism.
No, sorry, that's wrong.
Hold on.
That they sell it to the House of Commons following an agreement. Unionism doesn't have a veto over this.
No, but hang on. They have 10 seats.
That's correct.
The DUP. And also, to make this work, surely on the ground in the north, they have to have buy-in from both communities and partly the unionist community. So let me get reactions. Stick on your headphones
sure.
there. And I'll come to Dr. John Kyle, who is the 40th anniversary of the founding of the Progressive Unionist Party is today, and they're having a conference in Coleraine. Their deputy leader is the aforementioned John Kyle. John, you're very welcome to the programme.
Thank you very much indeed.
Let me get your reaction to this possible compromise or a pathway to an awful lot of talk about consent and customs. Now, we'll come to consent in just a second. But if the customs arrangement is legally out but practically in terms of consent for Northern Ireland, how would unionism react?
Well, unionism is nervous, I think, because we haven't seen the detail. Unionism, by and large, supports Brexit because the European Union was seen to be remote, undemocratic, unaccountable, and so it was hardly surprising that unionists wanted a bit more self-determination, a bit more accountability, a bit more sense of having some say in the governance of the country. So unionists does remain largely in favour of Brexit, although not by no means universally in favour of Brexit. But I think that there is concern. We recognise that a deal is better than no deal, and we do want the governments to reach some sort of agreed
John, can we go get down to brass tacks for a second and look at what's outlined in reports around the customs problem? So if it is a case that they have a very convoluted solution that leaves the North pretty much aligned in terms of customs with the rest of the European Union, but legally out, is that something that unionism would fear, or is it something you'd put up with?
Well, unionism fears increasing divergence from the rest of the United Kingdom. And it's the unintended consequences of these agreements that are the problem. So if there was an agreement reached that led to a greater and greater divergence between Northern Ireland and the rest of the United Kingdom, that would be a problem. But one does see that there could be customs arrangements put in place that would allow Northern Ireland to trade freely with the South and still trade freely with the United Kingdom, the rest of the United Kingdom.
Yeah, but hang on, John, because I think, as far as I can see, reports of any type of a border on the island of Ireland is out. So the next thing we're looking at, it seems, is some kind of a border maybe down the Irish Sea. Is that in a from your point of view? Or would that provoke unionism, even loyalism?
Well, the talk of a border is always difficult. And it is provocative, and it does signal divergence from the rest of the United Kingdom. But there are customs arrangements. There are already special arrangements between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK in terms of animals and farm produce. And there is differences in some of the taxation. So it is difficult, but it is not a deal breaker. In my opinion, I'm just giving you my opinion. If I could say that the Progressive Unionist Party, when it came to the Good Friday Agreement, the Progressive Unionist Party were at the forefront of negotiating the Good Friday Agreement because it entailed compromise. Mm. We recognised that to achieve that, there had to be compromise on all sides. Now, I think we're at a similar point in history where we've got a huge decision to be made. Nobody is going to get all that they want. I think that there needs to be compromise on all sides. And if we can come up with an agreement which again, does not lead to growing and growing divergence between the North of Ireland and the rest of the UK, then I think unionists could work with that.
Let me put some
unionists.
Let me put another point to you, John Kyle, then, via a panellist. Catherine Martin is Deputy Leader of the Green Party, and this is around consent. Mm-hmm. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, Catherine Martin, your party believes that there should be some kind of a referendum to opt in or out of this in 3 or 4 years' time, or whatever the timeline is.
Yes, we do. But firstly, just when John is on the line, because at the heart of this is peace, and precious peace, and a lot of communities and political parties played a role in achieving that with the Good Friday Agreement. And one person who history will be very kind to is David Irvine, and the role that he played in that. So just want to recognise that when John is on the line.
Thank you, Catherine.
I guess where we're coming from with this is that what we think has been proposed with this customs partnership, that Stormont will have the vote. But what we're really saying is you're in, and you need the double majority to get out. So you're saying you have to accept it. So it's almost like an indirect veto. So what we're saying is let the people of Northern Ireland decide.
In a referendum.
That's very clear.
What do you think of that, John?
I think referenda tend to make more problems than they solve. I think that...
Where do you get that idea, John?
Not always.
With a winner and a loser. We absolutely agree with the idea of consent. We think that it probably is better for elected representatives. We're in a representative democracy. We think it's better that our elected representatives should be given through them rather than through another referendum.
Okay, well, look, good luck with your conference, John Kyle. I hope you have a good turnout there, that it's there. You have good engagement. But thank you very much indeed for joining us and giving us your perspective on those elements of the discussions ongoing, the negotiations and the tunnel. And the tunnel is pretty airtight, it seems, because there's not much coming out of it in terms of consent or detail on customs or anything else. But we do have leaks from listeners. 51551, Sean says, Cormac, on Brexit, Brussels and Ireland need to make concessions on the May deal if there is to be a deal. Otherwise, it will be a forced extension by UK. Brussels' strategy seems to be a second referendum in the UK. And Gerard says, what does it matter if an agreement comes out of these Brexit talks? Theresa May came back all bells and whistles blowing with a deal, only to fail vote after vote in the Parliament. They probably will reach a deal, but it will not pass in the British Parliament. Labour in England have already said they will not support it. There's a very, very long way to go in this, says that texter. It seems that that could be correct, couldn't it, Catherine Murphy? Because even if there is a deal, how likely is it, given the numbers in Westminster, that it'll achieve any kind of consent there?
Well, we don't know, because we don't know what the deal, if there is a deal, is. I actually thought that was quite a positive interview you had there with John Kyle. I think there is a degree of looking at it with the glass half full, and there being the possibility of the best of both worlds. If a deal manifests that's like that, it would be, you know, that would maybe change the dynamic in the House of Commons. Look, I personally feel that the time is very tight on this, and I'm more inclined to think that you're looking at an extension than getting something nailed down before the end of the month in terms of a deal. But I think the dynamic may have changed. But look, we're being asked to trust as well, and it's pretty difficult when you look at some of the characters involved.
You're saying hard to trust Cromwell, which is what Michael Darcy called Boris Johnson. When you look at what he said during the
referendum and the lies during the referendum campaign itself, he wouldn't be your first protocol for reliable information. So, look, I think there's a long way to go on in this in a very short period of time.
The minister wants to correct me there.
I don't think I called him Cromwell. I may have made a comparison.
for which you were spanked and you immediately deleted the tweet. From a psychological point of view, Enda Murphy, I wonder, I mean, maybe there was more positivity there from unionism or John Kyle than we've had up to now. The more, the closer we get to the edge, are people more willing to compromise then?
Well, I think it's the way everything goes down to the wire, you know, I come from this from a psychological and a behavioural perspective. I'm not a politician, unlike everybody else here, you know. But, you know, I will regularly have young fellas sent in to me, all right, who are kicking off, and they're behaving this way and behaving that way. And they come in with their rap sheet, and they're, you know, they're doing this and they're doing that and the other. And the first question I actually ask is, what are they trying to say that's not being listened to, that they're having to go to such extremes in order to be heard? And whenever you ask that of teachers and schools and parents and everything like that, they can't answer the question because nobody's listening. So when you're dealing with a situation like this, you have to ask, you know, when people actually voted for Brexit, when they voted in the referendum, what were they actually trying to say? What were they actually looking for? And was that ever actually listened to? Because, you know, it happens that some people came on and they just took that on board. And, you know, I'm reminded of Judge Brandis, who repealed prohibition in 1921. And he said, you know, he said, there's no greater danger to liberty than the insidious encroachment of men of zeal, well-intentioned, but with little understanding.
Yeah, well, do you know, you've thrown down the gauntlet to our listeners there. What were people saying in terms of the referendum on Brexit? A texter, Helen in Galway, says, why would you give consent to the DUP, who despite having paid their salaries, or having their salaries paid, I think, have refused to work at Stormont for nearly 3 years? You also seem to forget that Northern Ireland voted Remain in the referendum, says Helen. And Rory says, Cormac, Northern Ireland is not the same as the rest of the UK. You are well aware of this. Northern Ireland voted to stay in the customs union and the single market. The unionists want to fossilise their control of the North. We're going to move on. Before I do, I promised myself I'd ask the man in charge of driving down insurance costs, because it's a huge worry, Brexit,
sure,
for every single business in the country. And a lot of it is uncontrollable. But something surely we can control is spiralling insurance costs. Now, you're the man, you're the minister charged with taking that down. Any progress whatsoever?
Yes, no, there's been massive progress, sort of has been, but so a lot of people have an incorrect belief that government can control the price of insurance. So an insurance product that's sold, government doesn't have any control over the pricing of that product. So it's no different than a loaf of bread that's sold in the shops. We don't control it. We with the other actors on the pitch, the Central Bank of Ireland, are the regulators. We try and operate so that there's a properly functioning insurance sector in our country. The issue has come to a head on the basis of award levels being way too high. They're out of kilter with our English and Welsh counterparts. The Personal Injury Commission reported 12 months ago.
So you're saying the insurance industry is right, that judges are awarding far too much in terms of compensation?
The figures are...
You're buying into their line, are you?
No, so hang on a second. I'm not. My objective is to put in place a structure that is sustainable so that insurance companies can be profitable. If an insurance company is profitable, they stay here. If they're not profitable, they exit the market. We've seen that in one particular sector.
How could they not be? They are profitable. They're making millions and millions of profit.
The lines, on some lines...
Oh, Christ, they are.
No, hang on. That's wrong, Cormac.
Well, hang on.
On some lines, they are not profitable, so they exit the market. So the area that we all have a lot of knowledge on now is the play areas, leisure areas, trampolines, bouncy castles. There is nobody writing that market.
Well, let's get off the trampolines for a second, because I can tell you that 17 general insurers in the Irish market made combined operating profits of 227 million in 2017.
That's correct.
How is that not profitable?
But you see, it's not profitable in some of the lines that they write, so they exit, they leave.
But hang on, overall it's profitable.
No, I know.
I'm afraid that you're buying their line.
No,
telling you, insurance on trampolines is not profitable, you have to get out of the market.
You're not listening to me. Their insurance companies write different sectors. The sector that we have a huge problem is the leisure sector. Mm. Hotels can't get... are finding really difficult to get insurance. Nightclubs can't get insurance. And in particular, the play zones for children can't get insurance. Now, some of them have banded together and they have now an insurance policy on the basis of a group policy.
So when can we see prices coming down then?
Well, the Personal Injury Commission reported 12 months ago. The Judicial Council bill was passed last summer. A lot of people didn't believe we'd get that over the line. I have to, and I always acknowledge the support that I've got in both Houses of the Oireachtas to get that over the line. We will very, very soon, in a matter of days, not weeks, we will have an announcement from the judiciary in relation to the establishment of the Personal Injury Committee within the Judicial Council.
And insurance costs will come down when?
The insurance costs will come down when the Judicial Council meet with... the Personal Injury Committee meet within the Judicial Council.
Okay.
And they reduce the levels of awards.
I need to take a break, but this is a huge issue.
Well, I'm happy to come back to it, please.
Yeah. Catherine.
Yeah, I mean, there is no doubt that this has taken a very long time. And one thing I agree with the Minister on is that there is some of the awards are out of kilter. A lot of claims, most claims that are made, will be valid and justifiable claims. But the minor injury area is one of the areas where we are out of kilter.
Are legal costs too high? That's what the insurance industry says as well. The awards, number one, but also legal fees.
Everything doesn't have to go to law, you know. And essentially, that is part of a solution in driving down costs. But the insurance industry, and you talk about particular sectors, and indeed it includes things like festivals and things like that. So it actually is having a really big impact on community initiatives. But even things like, for example, flooding. When the information is collected, like the OPW did a big study going back more than 10 years ago called the CFRAM study, where they mapped the whole country and identified areas, even where there was very big amounts of public money put into remediating areas that had been prone to flooding in the past, there wasn't an adjustment in terms of recognising that by insurance company, and coded places that never even flooded
but if they believe there's a risk, I mean, why would you force
where the risk has been addressed and very sizable amounts of money have been put in, public money have been put in, then there isn't a recognition very often by the insurance companies that has happened. So I just think the insurance companies do want it. They want it both ways.
Yeah, End is hopping up and down on legal fees, but I need to bring in. Yeah, no, I need to bring in Catherine Martin.
It's really clear, very much so. This year we're finding they're making it, you know, extraordinary profit, and Irish businesses are struggling due to incredible premiums, and also the infrastructure of volunteering organisations, even down to your tidy towns, are crumbling because of insurance hikes. So I welcome that you're saying, Minister, that the Judicial Council will be established soon. I hope there's a time frame on the claims guidelines as well. Because
I'll give you the time frame now if you want. The time frame that I put on it all along has been for the end of this year. So the committee should form within a week or so, a week to 10 days, within the Judicial Council. And at that point, the seven judges, I've asked that they're tasked with looking at the five primary areas of personal injury. Whiplash is the biggest by a country mile, soft tissue, and two or three other areas. So that's the time schedule that I've
put on. But is it going to be the same interaction you had with the banks, where you drag them in and say, would you mind lowering the mortgage rates? And they'll say, no,
There's a difference between the banks. The banks are commercial entities. The judiciary operate on behalf of the people of Ireland.
And the insurance companies.
No, I'm talking about the judiciary to reduce the levels of awards. So, I mean, if you look at the numbers, if somebody gets an award of €10,000 in the UK, it's €44,500 here. That's not sustainable.
And the reason... Why are you tackling... There are various elements to this. Why are you tackling the element that goes to the person who has had a trip or a fall and deserves possibly compensation? Why not
because
tackle
I want to absolutely make sure that the people who are injured, who are legitimately injured, who don't have a bit of a bruise, that those people are able to be covered by insurance. And every person who I meet who purchases insurance, so that if there is an incident on their premises, on their business, that the people who come in, and if there is fault on their part, that they are paid. We have too many cases where some people get a small injury and they get 10 or 20,000 euros for small injuries. That era is ending. And that area is ending, thankfully, and hopefully we can have that done before the end.
Let me get him in before the break.
What really frustrates me, and the reason I'm hopping up and down, is that everybody, you know, each stakeholder in the whole debacle points the finger at what everybody else needs to change and ignores what they need to change. And in any conflict situation, you got to stop pointing the finger at somebody else and focus on what you actually need to change yourself. And to stand in and, you know, on Michael's behalf there, I think that's what you're actually saying, Michael, is that, you know, the government or whoever it is that's trying to deal with it is going back to each stakeholder and saying, listen, what do you actually need to change in this? And that's the only way of actually finding it.
Okay, look, I can tell you at 66 minutes, Ireland has got another try against South Africa. I think it's 40 points to 5.
Samoa,
I'm at the quarter final stage already. If only it were South Africa.
You've moved on there.
Yeah, I have. My head's somewhere else. Anyway, we'll be back in 2 minutes' time.
Stay in the moment.
Email saturday@rte.ie. Saturday with Cormac O'Hara on RTE Radio 1.
And welcome back to the programme. It's now, I'm told, 47-5 in the rugby. It must be nearly over at this stage. And that's against Samoa. If we were beating South Africa, 47-5 would be something else, wouldn't it? Anyway, let me give you some reaction from listeners listening to our conversation. An awful lot of them exercise, I'll tell you, Minister, about the insurance. I challenge your question. Why should someone who falls be able to sue anyone, says John Moylan in Athenry. He goes on to say, Why not make gravity illegal if that's the case? Someone got so for bumping their head off a sink in a creche this week. Outrageous, says John. Well, as a lawyer, John, I can tell you if gravity didn't have due regard to the care and safety of the people using gravity and so on and so on. A texter, Nick in Dublin, says... the minister is talking about reducing awards. All that will do is increase the insurance company profits. Also on legal fees, this week's Bar of Ireland survey showed that two-thirds of barristers are struggling to make a living. Only two winners here, the insurance companies and the lobbyists they've hired to fool a gullible minister.
Yeah, I want to be very clear on this. My objective here isn't to lower awards so that insurance companies can become more profitable. I've met with all of them. I put the very hard line to them that when the awards are reduced, so too must the premium. Now, to be fair to the Finance Committee, they've done that as well. Mm. But I've done that in private. They've done it in public. I've been to the UK to meet other underwriters over there to try and encourage them to come back into the market here. Our market is too small. We have too small a number of insurance companies, and we need more people to come in and bring in additional competition.
Okay. We're going to move on to mental health, given that it's Mental Health Week and so on. But a quick one for you, Catherine Martin, if you don't mind.
Yes.
Specifically for you, it's around Extinction Rebellion. One question. Mary Robinson, former president, was talking last night. And she's saying, look, what Extinction Rebellion are essentially trying to do is disrupt. And the truth is we need disruption. Now, this relates to business as well, because they have said, look, if we have ongoing disruption and protests out like we have had outside the Dáil this week and traffic stopping and so on, it's not good for business. It's not good for people going about their business. Are they right to do what they're doing in terms of their protests?
Just to say, in terms of their protests, I think it's been incredibly goodwilled and peaceful, their protests actually this week, and they'd be commended for that. But I would agree with Mary Robinson that disruption to business as usual is what is needed. We're in climate breakdown. We no longer talk about climate change, but climate breakdown. We are the second country in the world to declare a climate emergency and biodiversity emergency. And they are motivated, as are the climate strikers, our students across the world, by
so
a lack of leadership and a lack of action.
Stop traffic is okay.
Yeah, it's for this week. It's putting a shed. You have to realise they're coming from, I see it as a Green Party member, from complete frustration of lack, and it's shedding that light on what's needed. We need climate action. We want climate action, and they're leading that, and I commend them for that.
Okay.
Could I just say that we declared a climate emergency, and rightly so, but it's the follow through after that that is more frustrating than any disruption. We have a National Development Plan that just didn't change on foot of us declaring that, and has to change on foot of us declaring that, or we'll continue to see protests.
Okay, look, we'll move on, because this week you almost would forget that it was Budget Week, wouldn't you, on Tuesday? But we also had Mental Health Week. In the budget, we had an increase in the living alone payment, and that's very interesting. We'll come to that in just a second. We had the report from the Inspector of Mental Health Services, which was highly critical of state services, and we had a relatively small, some would say, increase in the mental health budget. Now, what did you make of it all this weekend, Murphy, as a psychologist and psychotherapist? Because some would say that it was a bad week for mental health and the provision of mental health services, because people working in this area got very little.
Well, I remember a mental health inspector saying one time, it was a good few years ago, he said, there's no votes in psychiatry. And that's the reason we've always been at the actual, we've always been the last ones to get anything, because everybody else shouts. And unfortunately, people who develop mental health problems, they don't go out on the streets and they don't march and they don't stop the traffic to say, listen, I want help here. But, you know, I came into nursing back in 1983. I was originally a psychiatric nurse, then a general nurse. So I've been in the business now for donkey's years. And I came in when the Planning for the Future report came in, all right? And at a very early age, I saw, you know, what was happening was there was cherry picking out of the report. So things that were actually going to save us money were actually picked out and promoted. And then things that were actually going to cost money were conveniently ignored. And then we actually had the, you know, what was the last? Vision for change.
Which is going to be refreshed, maybe, according to Minister Simon Harris during the week.
Well, why does it need to be refreshed? It's still an excellent document about what we should actually be doing, all right? So it doesn't need to be actually refreshed. It needs to actually be acted upon, because a lot of people went in with great intentions and gave an awful lot of time, an awful lot of effort to thinking that this would actually change things. And yes, we did get a new Mental Treatment Act and everything like that out. But, you know, where we're actually at is that, you know, we're exactly the same with mental illness and mental health and the psychiatric services where we were with physical health back in the 60s. And there was a famous cardiologist who said, he says, I'm downstream rescuing people, taking them out, resuscitating them, doing a coronary artery bypass graft, sending them on. He says, I'm spending all my energy downstream rescuing people that I've no time to go back upstream to find out who's pushing them all in. Now, mental health is exactly the same. You know, one of four of us is going to end up in front of a psychiatrist. Full stop. All right. And I'm not going to be particularly, you know, it's just as going to affect me just as well. All right. Knowledge affects nothing. All right. You know, 75% of them will start under 25 years of age. You know, now using tertiary care as our only care, right, is a bit like sending everybody who gets a sniffle or a cough off to see a consultant psychiatrist. So what we actually need is we need to go back to the concepts of secondary care. We're doing quite well, actually, at the moment with primary care as understanding and teaching
but
people.
But are we, yeah, are we, Enda? Because it strikes me doing this programme and watching current affairs that every now and again you get a study. Like the medical council, they say, look, we're over-prescribing anti-anxiety drugs.
Absolutely.
You get the USI study that
says... And that's what we're taking.
An awful lot of students...
That's tertiary care. That's tertiary care. I'm talking about primary care. When I first started, I set up an emotional first aid training program for parents and teachers. And I set it up some years ago, all right? And when I started running that course, I started asking people, I says, could somebody define what mental health is? How would I know that I've got it? And when I did my own master's thesis, I said, health professionals' understanding of mental health. And I turned around to Dennis Ryan, my supervisor, and I says, I'm in trouble here because I couldn't find anybody who actually understood it. Now I go into a class and I can go into a class of 5-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 7-year-olds, and I can say, you know, tell us about mental health or tell us about your emotions or feelings.
So,
and now they can actually answer the question.
Before we get to the services and what's being provided, what isn't, can anybody, any of the politicians on the panel, answer this for me. Why, according to the Tilda survey, why is there 400,000 people suffering from loneliness in this country? Why? I know you know the answer. You're top of the class. Why, I wonder?
Yeah, it's a really difficult question. And I think it's society has moved and changed as society does. And with the urbanisation of our country now, a lot of people don't do what they used to do in the past, which was knock the next door neighbour's door and say hello, how are we getting on, how are things. We have a lot of people who live in urban Ireland who now live in rural Ireland. This is something that's, I make the point that we talk about rural Ireland a lot, but there's a huge number of people from cities, towns, who now live in the countryside.
Commuting
in all different directions.
Because they can't buy a house in Dublin.
Commuting in all different directions, Cormac, not just to Dublin. But they don't know who their next door neighbours are. And it's a change of society.
So that's one element. Can you give me another? Why is there 400,000? It's a shocking figure, really.
It is,
And people are embarrassed to talk about it too, I think.
I actually think people are much more forthcoming in talking about mental health than they used to be. But I think you've got to look at things in a holistic way. You know, there's huge stresses now that are probably greater than they ever were before. There's much greater demand on people's time. Commuting time would be part of that, but there's a much greater demand on their time. You often find that it takes, you know, two people, like a full time work, just to keep a roof over their heads. Things that are, you know, where there's no additional gain, if you like. It's all just being paid in a, you know, just to keep the show on the road.
So to pay the mortgage, to pay childcare, both parents have to run out the door
and the
rent
either as well. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, then, you know, where is the time for other things? The time to relax, the time to think, the time to play, the time to engage with other people. So I think we've got to take a holistic approach in terms of how we organise society.
But I wonder then, Catherine Martin, we've two Catherines, I feel compelled to call you
green
Catherine and purple Catherine. But can I ask you, Catherine Martin, I wonder then, and this is possibly the fault of all parliamentarians here before me and in the Dáil, that we are building in the Dáil an economy and not a society or a community at all.
Oh yeah, and it's putting that the heart back into communities, and as I've been said, it's that urban sprawl. I grew up in rural Ireland, even though I'm in Dublin now, longer than I was, but that has changed, you know, the access to your post office, to your local bank, that interaction, your local shops. Now we see villages with the shop fronts are closed, no post office, so that is missing, that everyday interaction that was there. When I was at school, we used to go into the local nursing home to visit the elderly. Mm. Now nursing homes are often built outside without, you know, you'd need a car to get to it, so it's not practical for students to visit. And I even saw that in the development plan in Dunleary Rath Down when I was a councillor, this move to build nursing homes far away from communities. But I also think we need to help with loneliness as well. When it comes to mental health that we're discussing, we need to invest in holding on to your mental health, mm-hmm. and in mental well-being and in resilience and how to cope with all the stresses.
But how do you do that, Enda, without the resources?
Here we're back to resources. It's understanding that's actually required. The difference between loneliness and aloneness is when you're on your own and you accept yourself. Loneliness is when you're on your own and you don't accept yourself. So all the pressures that are coming down, and we talk about isolation, will actually make it worse. But it's all to do, you know, with what you actually do with yourself, kind of thing, right? And, you know, I know that there's a teacher in America, and she starts up a program, and what she teaches primary school teachers to do, she says, goes into a junior infants class, and she says, now, I want you to list out the three people you'd like to sit beside next week. And she, of course, all the kids put down, I want to sit beside Mary and I want to sit beside Johnny. And she takes them all up and she goes through them. And what she's trying to identify is the children who are on nobody's list, because that's where it starts. And that's simple technique.
Can I just say to you what they are thinking, the politicians? And I'll say it to you, they won't. They'll say, this is awful waffle, hot air for a current affairs programme. What's your reaction to that now?
As we're actually talking here, there are four people in Ireland contemplating taking their own lives. And by the time this week is over, two of them will have done that. Most of them are actually under 25 years of age. So myself and my colleagues are dealing with this every single day.
Can I take issue with you there?
We'll deal with that in a second.
I think that was a very unfair statement.
Why?
I think it was a very unfair statement.
Okay, come on.
All of us as politicians, we do our very best for anybody who ever comes to us, whatever perspective they're coming from, especially mental health. We all see people with mental...
That's not the point, Minister.
The point is what you do with resources and what you do with education and understanding. We think he's talking waffle. I certainly don't.
Well, the evidence suggests that...
The evidence would actually suggest otherwise, because, you know, I'm not a Fine Gael member, but stand in on Michael's side. They came out with the Better Outcomes, Better Future report, all right, which is kind of protocols, guidelines for the adoption of behaviour processes in schools. You know, they are actually coming out with the expert advice that's coming out from Tuzla, that to other professionals are saying, this is what you need to actually do to prevent this. You can't just send everybody off to a psychiatrist.
Correct. Yeah, can I just say, I think it's really important that we do listen, and we listen to people who have direct experience. But we do have direct experience in some respects ourselves, because a lot of people come to us looking for services, and we know where services are breaking down, and we know where there are shortcomings. And just yesterday I got a reply to a question in relation to resources in terms of Vision for Change for the cohort of people that are under 18. And the amount of people that were determined to be needed to deliver Vision for Change at a community level was 1,238, and we have 709. Mm-hmm. All those years later. Now, there was a figure in the budget, and that's across nine different areas. There was a figure in the budget that jumped out at me, and that we have 42,000 additional public servants since 2014. Now, this is where are they? And who is managing the workforce planning? Because if you're
they're,
going to deliver
everywhere.
This, if you're going to deliver this, you've got to be focused.
Those staff are in every different sector. They're in education, they're in justice, and they're in healthcare.
Well, part of the problem was probably the dissolution of the Mental Health Division and National Director of Mental Health, which happened in 2018, and I think that that needs to be returned in order that we have someone managing the budget. But, you know, what is clear is the signal that this week in the 39 million that's really invested in existing services, like, that is no hope for the 2,500 children who are waiting for CAVS, for 8,000 people waiting for primary care, psychiatry, okay. Health.
One of the biggest issues
look,
there,
for no
huge,
rehab.
A huge issue there.
A quick response.
Yeah, a huge
finish,
issue there isn't the money. The issue is that we can't hold on to staff and we can't employ staff.
Okay.
That's a huge
issue. But also the 25 million from last year's budget that wasn't released.
Hasn't spent yet. Can I say that we have had a huge response to this, and I promise the listeners and politicians and practitioners that we'll come back to it. There is a great irony as well. We had promised a panel to talk about the Financial Services Union right to disconnect from technology and so on after work. We don't have time to disconnect at this point. But yeah. Muíochas, we're finishing a little bit early now for the round ball, I think. But Ireland have beaten Samoa 47-5. Roll on the All Blacks. Kamate, kamate. Muíochas slam. Minister Michael Darcy, Catherine Murphy, Catherine Martin, Angus Enda Murphy. Until next week, bye-bye.
Saturday with Cormac O'Hara was produced by Tom Donnelly. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by A.B. Philbin-Bowman, and sound today was by Mark McGrath.